From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Chiefs defensive tackle Chris Jones will get the franchise tag. Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs and RGR Football. I'm Ryan from that channel as well as Rogue Analytics, and we are getting ready for the 2020 NFL Draft. The Combine is off and going, and some news that came out of it is that, as I suspected, I think I informed you guys that of a couple of weeks ago, Chris Jones is going to get the franchise tag. That doesn't mean that there's any kind of halt in negotiations or anything like that. It doesn't mean that there's any less likelihood that he may end up staying a Kansas City Chief. But this is the way that it's going to start off. They will place the tag on Chris Jones and move forward in an effort to try and make a long-term signing after that tag is in place. It backs up what the franchise needs to do. And honestly, it does spur a little bit of negotiation, because if the player and his representatives are motivated to get a long-term deal, this is the kind of thing that starts that conversation and kind of kickstarts it into a little bit better back and forth. Now, after last season, there was the offseason holdout. He put that away, played through the season, got to the Super Bowl. A lot of big positives happened with the relationship with Chris Jones on the field and with the front office. So it does stand to reason that there's still a significant possibility that the Chiefs do bring back Chris Jones if they can get to a number that makes sense for them. And I don't feel like this particular negotiation is going to be about much more than what Chris Jones wants for money, because I do feel like the Chiefs don't want to spend as much on him as they did on Frank Clark, only because Frank Clark plays every single down equally as well. Chris Jones is a better pass rusher than he is a run defender. While that isn't the spotlight in the current NFL, it is something to consider. And I think that you have to have a leadership hierarchy as well. And often in locker rooms, a lot of that hierarchy is developed by players' paychecks. And I don't think that they want to do anything to really undermine just where Frank Clark is in terms of that defense's leadership, but honestly, with the entire roster's leadership. He needs to be a guy in that locker room that is a leader for years to come. I think the team is focused on that and aware of what the repercussions could be if you get anything that kind of steps on those toes. Tyrann Mathieu is clearly the alpha dog of the defense. Frank Clark is the beta and has to be right there to step in should something happen. Do you need three? That becomes the question. I don't know that Chris Jones is a guy that the team sees as someone who could step into a leadership role any more so than being a leader by example, playing his best, and being the explosive defensive tackle that he is. I don't think you're looking for motivation from Chris Jones. I think he keeps it light, and he's actually plays a very important role in keeping the defensive side of the ball, but honestly, the entire locker room, in kind of a lighthearted mood, keeping things loose. He's got a great sense of humor and personality, and I think that comes out not only when we see him in the media, but I think behind closed doors in the locker room every day. I think that's important. I think the team sees that as important, too. The question mark always goes back to how important is it and how much does that represent in terms of dollar figure? That also comes in that you have to make sure that you have some other holes you have to fill on defense, and you can't sell the farm to just a few players. They have big contracts already to Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu, a pretty sizable one, Anthony Hitchens as well, and you have to be careful with just what kind of total hole you dig on one side of the ball in terms of total contract expenditure. So that's something to keep involved. What I expect to happen is that this tag will be in place. We'll hear about discussions continuing to go forward, hopefully, with a little bit more ground gained all the time. And I do feel that there's still a good 40% chance that Chris Jones does get back with this team or plays under the tag. I think the longer shot is the possibility of trading him because they can't reach an agreement and they don't want him to play out this season on the tag. That will be what will be the big question as we inch forward here. When we come back from this break, I'm going to get with Matt Derrick and get his input, not only this situation, but everything that's going on with the team down in Indianapolis as they get ready for the on-field workouts that are just starting as we're getting ready to record this. And amongst all the hoopla that is going on in Indianapolis, we got a chance to get with Matt Derrick. Matt, how are you hanging in?
I am hanging in. This is one of those crazy weeks, isn't it? There's just it's too much going on almost.
Yeah, there's things everywhere. And Thursday, it came down that what we talked about, I think we talked about it a few months ago, but definitely the last couple of weeks, I've been reminding everyone, Chris Jones is going to get the franchise tag. I'm not terribly surprised, are you?
No, I mean, this is the least breaking news of all time. I mean, it would have been breaking news if the report was that Chiefs and Jones have figured it out and they got a deal done. But no, this is preordained, I think, going back a year ago. I mean, this is the way that was going to happen. You know, Brett Veach alluded to it a little bit in his remarks at the Combine, saying that they spoke with Chris Jones and his agents and the representation last offseason. They continued in those negotiations through training camp. Once the season began, though, everything pretty much shut down. And it wasn't completely dissimilar to the way that things unfolded with Tyreek Hill, too, because remember, they continued talking with Hill and his agent right up to the beginning of the season and got that extension done before week one. So at the time that they got that done, talks with Jones shut down. So at this point, they're really just picking up where they left off six months ago. And, you know, and starting that conversation this week. So, no, I mean, there's very little chance that we're going to get anything done. Deadlines make deals. This is not a deadline. The franchise tag deadline's just a foregone conclusion. The Chiefs were going to tag him. Now the real deadline extends on to the deadline that you got to reach to reach a deal with your franchise player, or otherwise they can only play under the tag this year. So we got a while of ways to go on that one. So this is just step one of a very long process between Chiefs and Jones.
Yeah, and I like the way that you put that. That like the designation of the tag is really the opening step in trying to get something done. The comments that Brett Veach made, and we'll talk about Sammy in a second, but how much do you take this overly positive is the way that I would determine what Brett Veach had to say about trying to keep the band together and keep everybody happy. Is that a little bit of smoke around the fact that they knew they were going to have to use this tag? Or do you think that there is an actual possibility that somehow these two sides could reach a number value that gets them to an agreement?
Well, I mean, you know, everything that both sides have said, I mean, even going back to last year, has been all along that they want to stay together. I mean, that the Chiefs have continued, you know, whether it's public statements like Veach says, or even, you know, behind the scenes things that they say, it's all has been that they want to keep Chris Jones. I still think that there is a price point at which it's got to happen. I mean, the Chiefs don't have an unlimited pile of cap space. I mean, that's just not the reality of it. So I think that if there's a number that if Chris Jones and his team and his camp holds to it and says, we're not signing for a dollar less than this, then yeah, I mean, things could break down. I mean, that scenario is out there. But the Chiefs do, they want to get it done. But like you said, now there was maybe a little bit of, you know, positive spin from Veach on the fact that, you know, of trying to maybe keep the band back together and keep as many guys as he could. Andy Reid was a little bit less positive. I mean, he even talked about the fact that he told the guys and said, you know what? Going to be changes. I mean, can't keep everybody together. I mean, it's business. Things are going to happen. And so that's the reality of it. Now, short term, long term, the Chiefs have space to get something done with Jones. But if they do that with Jones, then absolutely, it means there's going to be changes elsewhere.
Yeah, there's got to be a trickle effect if that were to happen, right? And that means not bolstering what is a depleted cornerback group with any kind of free agency that has to be in the draft at that point, because you're just out of space, right? Even whether he plays under the tag or you get some kind of extension, the the bonus number alone is going to keep that cap number high enough.
Yeah, and this is one of the most confusing times of year to follow NFL finances, and this year probably more than any other, because I feel like that, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like that we're behind what we normally know as far as, you know, one, what the salary cap's going to be, what the, you know, the franchise values are going to be, all of these things. And I think a lot of it stems to the CBA. Yeah. And that being one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of this information and a good sense of where the cap's going to be and what some of the hits are going to be, because the ownership at least is still, you know, hoping that they get the CBA done and then it's going to be moot, that the numbers are going to change from what they could be right now. And that's one of the things teams are holding out for too, is, you know, saying, hey, we don't know what this is going to look like. agents are wanting to hold off because they're not wanting to talk about numbers until they know what kind of pot of the pie they're able to go after. So all those questions are in the air. And if you look around, I mean, there's a couple of great sites, obviously, that track salary cap numbers. But if you go to both of them, they'll tell you different numbers for what the Chiefs have right now.
Yep.
And the reality is that neither one of them are right. Because all the public information that we have on the salary cap is imperfect. I mean, it's not everything that's in there. And I've been told, you know, directly from the personnel guys with the Chiefs, whenever I, you know, have brought up salary cap numbers that, you know, or that we talk about and are speculated about what the team has available, there's always that smile. And it's like, yeah, that's not the reality. No, we've got more space than that. So, you know, but you look at it and yeah, I mean, there's nothing drastically that the Chiefs have to do right now to fit Jones under the cap. Nothing drastic, but you hit on it, which is that if you want to bolster that cornerback group, if there's other places that you feel like that this team needs to upgrade in free agency, that's where the next move is going to come, because there's not, once you get Jones, you know, squeezed in there, there's not a lot of room. And that's when you're going to have to start making some of the tough decisions, seeing that maybe you can get some guys to restructure and to free up some space, or you get the CBA done and maybe there all of a sudden there's some instant space created. We just don't know at this point what's going to happen next.
Yeah, this CBA could end up, you know, like putting an addition on the house. It could be so big. Yeah, I've heard numbers upwards of $300 million, and those possibilities are obviously grandiose, but they do lead up to the fact that this is a significant restructure of what the dollars might be towards a cap for every roster in the league. And that domino effect is, I agree with you. I think that whatever vote is going to happen, and I don't think it's a particularly player-friendly proposal here. So I think as this deal is being proposed, it's got to happen first, but I think it's going to probably be ratified because of the discrepancy between who's benefiting what and what the timeline is. And for the younger guys that are not stars, are not the top five salaries on their team, that really helps push this through because a lot of them want to get what they can get now, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've really kind of hit on it, which is that this deal does benefit, the offer that's out there does benefit the guys who are maybe at the bottom or the middle of the pack, guys who are fighting for jobs, guys who make the league minimum that would see their pay bump up. And that's where most of the votes are. So I think there's a reasonable chance that this thing does get passed. It's going to get divisive. But, you know, once again, I mean, it's the owners who are thinking long term, and they're the ones who are going to be around in 10 years when this thing gets renegotiated again. The players won't be. And, you know, it's something that you're going to hear the stars are coming out against this thing, and for a reason, and it's not going to benefit them. But you know, I, to me personally, I just wish that there was more in that CBA for the, you know, players who had retired and for the players in their post careers, because there's not enough there. And yeah, that's where, you know, that these guys really need the most, you know, I mean, guys who are maybe 24 right now aren't going to be thinking about what their life's going to be like when they're 45, 55 and 65.
Right.
And this deal just doesn't do enough for them for then, but that's just me and my two cents.
Well, and I think a revenue share that isn't 50-50 can't hope to fund that many players for that long in serious lifetime healthcare. And I think one of the things that I think flew under the radar the most, it made me just outright laugh, that the proposal includes adding, is it vision or dental or one of those to their health coverage? Like, they don't have that now? This is a professional football league and you don't have that?
Yeah, there's a few of those things that are in there. It's like, wait a minute, what? And, you know, and even some of the little things. I mean, I personally, if you're going to have a 17th game, yeah, sure, you should cut back on padded practices and you should cut back on some of the wear and tear of these guys. But is that the biggest thing? No, I mean, I'm with you. If you're going to get a 17th game, and let's face it, a 17 game schedule is going to eventually lead to an 18 game schedule, and it's probably going to be over 20 weeks. You're basically adding 25% of the revenue that the owners can crack in, and the players are getting 0.5%.
Yeah.
And not getting the 50-50 split.
Yeah.
That's an incredible deal for the owners.
And I'm one for, if you're going to change out and get the 17th game, if you're cutting a preseason game, I think that's good, because a lot of guys still suit up for that. They might play three snaps, but you can blow an Achilles in three snaps just as easy as anywhere else. So that part of it, a game for game, I don't have a problem with, but you're right. If you're going to take that risk, the amount earned by 1.5% is just kind of ridiculous. But We're going to take our break there, folks, so not get too deep into the minutia, because there are other fish to fry, including Sammy Watkins and what else might be going down in Indianapolis. And I have trouble saying that town's word from Indiana, so forgive me for that. But another guy that was mentioned by Brett Veach this week, as well as Andy, I'm a little surprised, again, at the optimism. Do you think something can actually happen with Sammy Watkins, that he is, you know, his groovy university kind of universal, I meant, kind of guy, that he might actually take a pay reduction in order to stay with this team?
I mean, I do. I mean, I do think that possibility is there, you know, because Sammy's really happy in Kansas City. I mean, he really, obviously he likes the offense. He likes what he's being asked to do. I think he likes the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy, that there's a lot of players around, that he's part of the system. He loves Andy Reid. I mean, that was the thing that, you know, getting to talk to him a little bit, the Super Bowl that stood out was just, that's what he thinks was the biggest, the best decision of his entire career, was coming to play for Andy Reid. Loves the guy. So all that, you know, being equal, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that he would like to stay in Kansas City. And if it was just for one more year to see what happens, I think he'd be up for that. If he does stay in Kansas City, I will say this, it's going to be his decision, because the Chiefs can't afford him at $21 million as the salary cap number. Not going to happen. It's got to be less than that. So either the Chiefs are going to have to renegotiate with him, which means he's going to have to agree to that, or they're going to have to release him, and then he's going to be on the free agent market, and then it's going to just be, what deal does he want to take? Because I think there's a team out there who would be willing to throw a pretty good bag of money at Sammy Watkins. Maybe it's not going to be the $48 million 3 years that the Chiefs threw at him 2 years ago, but I think it could be a decent amount of money. And if that's the case, then yeah, I mean, it's truly, Sammy Watkins is going to be in Kansas City if and only if he wants to be in Kansas City.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like the 8-ish million average mark I can live with, and I think the team can get around that. But I just don't know, like you said, somebody's going to give him twice that probably just to keep up the paces. But I would like to see that concept, because as deep as the wide receiver group is in this particular draft class, it's hard to find somebody that you think can instantly walk in. Has any of this wide receiver class, like from their comments, from the way they've carried themselves, anybody stick out to you that, hey, you know, whether it's the first round or the fifth round, that the Chiefs should be looking at them in particular?
I mean, at this point, I'm probably looking at it a bit more as just kind of the big picture and where everything kind of, you know, is falling. You know, this is a really interesting draft class for wide receivers, and I'm probably not as bullish as some people are. I mean, I've heard, you know, predictions that maybe 35 to 40 receivers may go in this draft, which historically you look at it, that would be off the charts ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that many are going to go. But it's also the way that it breaks down. I mean, there's a couple of, you know, hey, you got some guys at the top of the draft that are going to be, I think, pretty good players, but they're not going to be there at 32. Is the value there at 32? Might not be. I mean, it might be one of these situations that the Chiefs are looking at it and saying, you know what, this draft is really, really rich at the very, very top, and maybe it's really fat in the middle of maybe the late second to the fourth round. Maybe there's a lot of, you know, depth there. But is there a lot of depth that, you know, like maybe late first and early second? That might be trickier. Yeah. I'm just not sure if the value is there at that position. There's going to be a lot of receivers taken. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it is a deep group, but I'm just curious to see. And the Chiefs are certainly kicking the tires at a lot of skill positions, receiver being one of them. I mean, there's a reason why that they are going to be looking at receivers. They're in the market for them. It's a deep group. But you know, is it still going to be the Chiefs have found that, you know, they have in the last 5-6 seasons, I mean, when they've gotten the receivers, it's been really in the middle part of the draft. And yeah. That's where I think that they're probably looking at, because I don't think they're looking at the Ferraris at the top. I think they're looking at maybe the guys who might be in the middle of the draft.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way too. I mean, it happens every year, but I think picks 50 to 100 are exactly where you can make money right here and get contribution early without having to break the bank. I don't expect them to pick at 32. I think they're out of there and they trade back for a couple of twos and probably grab a receiver with one of those. But there's a lot going on. This whole switch of the schedule in Indianapolis, I think, is interesting. I'm really for myself and what we're doing at Rogue Analytics, waiting to see what it does performance wise overall. But Do you think that it changes the ability of the teams, especially when they're in these now 45 formal meetings? You think it changes the ability because of the time of day or whatever to try to get something meaningful out of these really short interviews?
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how that unfolds, because you're right. I mean, the schedule this year is completely different, and I am interested in from a performance standpoint. If you know, now that they try and do these things so that the players have some time to rest and they don't have like long days, but I am curious, you know, that doing a lot of the, you know, the performance stuff at the end of the day, if that does, you know, wear on some of these guys, because these are long days in Indy. I mean, there's a lot of demands on these players' time. So I'm curious to see how that unfolds. Yeah, I'm curious to see how the teams are kind of using their meetings this time around with the players, with their formal interviews. Those can be really useful. I mean, they certainly can. I mean, as far as, you know, either ruling guys in or ruling guys out. But you're right. I mean, the whole structure of this entire thing is different. And I think that if a team's really well prepared for the changes this year, it's probably going to help them, you know, maybe squeeze out a little bit more in the draft than maybe some other teams. But I think it also, it could lead to some fool's gold, that maybe you're going to come out with some, you know, information out of the draft that maybe isn't as accurate as it has been in the past, because you're just not, these teams are navigating a new process.
Yeah. Adapt and overcome and try to get the most that you can out of it. I feel like the Chiefs are one of those teams that seem pretty nimble in terms of trying to do their part of it. My question is going to be, how forthcoming, how much more guarded are players at because of where they are in the day or whatever? I'll be real interested to see the fallout by the time we get to OTAs and everything. Last takeaways, anything you're looking for to happen in terms of any player evals or anybody to stand out in Indianapolis, or anything in particular you think the team needs to focus on?
I mean, I think we've learned a little bit about the positions, and I mean, that the Chiefs are looking at. And I think that we were kind of on target, you know, when we last talked and everything, about what they might be looking at, because it certainly does seem like receiver, running back, maybe a little bit of offensive line, a lot of cornerbacks, a lot of linebackers on the defensive side, maybe a little bit of defensive line depth, looking for some value there. I don't think there's been any surprises as kind of far as what the Chiefs are looking for, and maybe the market that they're diving into. I think we'll find out more. I mean, it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens, you know, regarding getting into the pro days and some of the other things that are coming up, seeing who they bring to the facility for some of the tryouts and everything and some of the testing. Right now, I mean, this team's got, I mean, we're going to find out about what holes they've got to fill here in the next couple of weeks, but it's, there are going to be, I mean, there's going to be some new faces on this team, and there could be some young guys, especially depending on what happens with what we talked about with Jones and Watkins and Duvernay-Tardif and some other guys. I mean, there's going to be some spots.
Yeah. I mean, there could be 15 or 20 new players on this roster next year from a Super Bowl champion. That's a lot to see, folks. Matt, thanks for all of your time. I appreciate you getting with us.
As always. Thanks, Ryan.
Folks, we'll have more updates for you. I'll probably drop something over the weekend on RGR as the combine goes on. We'll have any big takeaways, but the news of the day is Chris Jones. Thanks for checking us out today, and we'll talk to you next time.
Ryan Tracy is the founder of Rogue Analytics and the host of RGR Football on YouTube. Follow him there. Chris Clark is a senior analyst at ChiefsDigest.com, where you can get his work. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you for listening.